Anyways, so in general, the so-called Swiss cheese calabiaus have been there for a while, and their relevance, especially to string compactifications, was emphasized by the Cambridge group of Quevedo et al. So the bottom line is this: that let's say you talk about the threefold, bearing in mind the signature of the Hessian, we see that there are two kinds of contributions: one positive and a set of negatives. So the so-called negative contribution are coming from the S's, the so-called smaller cycles, in this case two cycles, and the B, the big, is coming from the bigger cycle. This can be promoted to the level of a Calabi threefold. So I've taken this from a paper by the Cambridge group. So you have a block of Swiss cheese with the bulk in the holes, and you can kind of identify the a pair of the edges with a large four cycle, and so we, so you can write out the volume as a term which has a positive contribution and a collection of negative contributions. So if you increase the size of the divisor, the contribution being negative would decrease the volume, which is as good as having the holes. So the particular Swiss cheese calabiau is the same, which was also considered in Quevedo's talk yesterday. So it is basically the so-called 11169. So in the context of compactifications, let's say from the F-theory picture, you can think of it as an elliptically fibered Calabi fourfold over a base, which is actually a P1 fibered over a P2, which in turn can be thought of as a resolved Weierstrass model, which would have possibly a D4 or a G2 singularity along one section, or maybe an E6 or E8 singularity in the other section. And in terms of the sense Orentifold limit, you can think of this as an Orentifold of a Calabi, which in turn is a T2 fibration, let's say, over a P2. And one can show that the volume is given like so. So it is of this form. And so we have a contribution from a single small complex divisor and a single big divisor. So this was used in a nice way by Balasubramanian and Quevedo and his group to essentially show that if you incorporate the perturbative after prime corrections, to which I would get to momentarily, it is possible to actually show that you end up with a potential which approaches zero from below. If you introduce a hierarchy of the Kähler moduli, in other words, you say that the smaller divisor goes scales like logarithm of the volume of the Calabi, and the divisor, the bigger divisor, scale like volume to the two-thirds. And unlike the KKLT scenario, they were able to, they, I mean, the minimum that they got here was actually a non-supersymmetric ADS minimum, which of course they uplifted by adding anti-D3 branches like KKLT to get a non-supersymmetric De Sitter minimum. A quick review of the perturbative after prime correction. So based on old work by Ferrara and his group and a bunch of other people, so this is the kind of a schematic form of the high derivative after prime cube corrections through type 2B supergravity. And you have terms which go like r to the fourth, you have terms which go like r cubed, and have a bunch of things which can be understood geometrically. For example, this object here could be thought of as a 10-dimensional generalization of an 8-dimensional Eulerian density. Similarly, the object Q can be thought of as a generalization of a 6-dimensional Eulerian density. You have a bunch of symbols which were introduced by essentially Schwarz a while back. So the consequence of having the inclusion of these corrections at the level of the effective action is basically a shift in the prepotential by an amount which is proportional to the Euler characteristic of the Calabi. And you can work out, therefore, the Kähler potential and, of course, a moduli space metric. And in the Einstein frame, the Kähler potential has the usual piece coming from the dilaton, and you have the minus twice log V, which is the usual contribution coming from the classical Kähler contribution. Then you have the shift because the perturbative after prime corrections, and you have the complex structure contribution. They would be an addendum coming from non-perturbative Kähler contributions, which I'll be getting to momentarily. So basically, the two main consequences is the loss of the no-scale structure of the theory with inclusion after prime corrections because of the explicit appearance of the volume of the manifold. I've not been particularly careful between whether I'm using the Einstein's frame or the string frame, but anyways. And the other thing is and it's kind of related. The first one is the appearance of the non-cancellation of the Mach W square term of the action. Well, now coming to the non-perturbative after prime corrections, I'd be largely following the work of Thomas Grimm. So I mean, the long and short of the story is as follows, that if you consider even if you consider the large volume limit of oriented folds with an appropriate modding out group involving a holomorphic isometric involution to get an n equals one theory, you have, you know, when you complexify the Kähler class, you have contributions which essentially go like the axioms that you get by expanding out the real NSNS2 form in a collection of harmonic two forms. So you will, one would see that one gets a contribution to the non-perturbative Kähler potential, which depends on essentially these bunch of fields. And to be more precise, it would be written out in terms of appropriate n equals one coordinates coming up momentarily again. So to be more specific, the involution that we would be considering would leave the Kähler form invariant and would flip the nowhere vanished holomorphic free form. And the dilaton, the axion, and the four form are our forms are even, and the NSNS and the 1.2 form potentials are odd. So one can still talk about a factorization of the underlying moduli space into a space which would be essentially, you know, kind of, you could correlate that to with the n equals one special Kähler geometry. The moduli space specified by a special Kähler geometry and a part which has as its n equals two parent the quaternionic geometry. So you can write out the Kähler potential here, and you can write out the Kähler potential here. The only non-triviality is that one needs to use a Mokai pairing, and the forms that you need to take a Mokai pair in a product involves the sum of the 0, 2, 4, and 6 forms. And one can show that the quaternionic, quote-unquote quaternionic Kähler potential can be written out in terms of the imaginary components of the n equals 1 coordinates tau, g, and t, which will be defined, I guess, on the next slide. So to summarize, essentially there are three kinds of contributions coming to the pre-potential. The usual classical contribution determined by the classical intersection numbers of the Calabi-Yau, the Becker sisters et al.'s perturbative outer prime contribution proportional to the Euler characteristic, and the non-perturbative addendum of, I don't want to call it Grin's contribution, but he's the guy who actually put it there in a concrete form the first time. Now, essentially these, so what is going to play a very important role in our subsequent discussion, especially when we talk about axionic slow-roll inflation, are these genus 0 Gopakumar-Vafa invariants. So usually they grow up very fast, and the third-party logarithm is actually bounded, but it can be shown that if you have an appropriate choice of the degrees, the k's, such that you have none in the involution even sector and you have some in the involution odd sector, you can hope that the series would truncate, and that is what we're going to assume. The appropriate set of n equals one coordinates.
What is
the argument of the Pauli logarithm?
Oh, it is exponential I K A T A. So the K A is. Anyways, so the K is defined here. So lambda A's are basically the basis of the two forms. Betas are the
involute of the art piece of the second homology group. Anyway, so here are the appropriate set of n equals one coordinates. So we have the usual axion dilaton modulus. We have the complexified axions complexified by tau. We have the complexified divisor volume where we also have, so we have this the divisor volume. We have the C4 axions, and we also have the C2 and the B2 axions, which is essentially coming from SL2Z covariance requirements. So the symmetry is used, of course, for constructing essentially these non-perturbative corrections to the basically moduli completion of Becker sisters results are the shift symmetry. So one can trivially see that the non-perturbative pre-potential is invariant. The perturbative is invariant. The volume doesn't care anyways. It's invariant. So, and one can talk about SL2Z more appropriately under the process of oriented folding, a subgroup of SL2Z transformation. So we essentially what we need to do is to construct the moduli completion in such a way that one would satisfy exponential of k going to exponential of k times mod c tau plus d under a moduli transformation. And based on earlier works by Green and Gupterle, the standard arc of the fourth corrections in 2B, 10-dimensional n equals 2 supergravity. So, and based on some other work by Lama et al. Having to do with moduli completions of quaternionic geometries by summation over worksheet images, Grimm conjectured, he basically threw in Eisenstein series. This denominator is absent here, it should be here as well. So as a cute quick check, if you set n equal to 0, you end up with the zeta 3, which is, you know, which is the Becker sisters perturbative alpha prime contribution. So to complement the story here, we also need to consider the non-perturbative superpotential. Schematically, it has to be the complexified divisor volume. And basically, you know, you look at the Euclidenized D3 mole volume action, you come up with this term. So the n alpha sigma, so sigma are the divisors which satisfy the Witten's unit arithmetic genus requirement. And you know, you can think of them as integrals of you know, four forms which you've used to expand the Ramondamon C4 in a basis. And the T alpha is the complexified divisor volume, which has pieces coming from the NSNS and the von Willen axioms mentioned on an earlier slide. So to cut a long story short, the contribution of the superpotential is assumed to be factorizable essentially into a D3 instanton piece and a D1 instanton piece, the latter denoted here. So any possible complex structure dependence is again assumed to be present as a prefactor, some one of determinants, yada yada. But so as far as the so one can check, of course, that you know, you want the gravitational mass to be invariant, so that would require that under such a transformation, the superpotential should transform like so, as is trivially verified by the Gokov-Vaffa-Witten complex structure superpotential. Well, so okay, so I just need to say the following, that you know, the non-perturbative superpotential will be written out in terms of a D3 instanton piece with the D3 instanton numbers n's and alphas, and essentially a contribution coming from the D1 instantons, which are written out in terms of appropriate holomorphic Jacobi theta functions, a weight minus one and index n. The classical intersection numbers are assumed to provide the required metric on the national lattice, which would appear in holomorphic Jacobi theta function. So okay, all right. So there's another story about what are the loop corrections. We heard a little bit of that yesterday. So basically, there are two kinds of loop corrections that you need to consider when you're considering loop corrections to the Taylor potential. One has so one set of corrections appear to be coming from, or they actually come from, closed string exchange that includes a time momentum between D3 brains and D7 brains wrapped around four cycles. And the other set appear to come, they actually come from, they're conjectured to come from intersecting stacks of D7 brains wrapped around four cycles. Now, the bottom line is that it was shown by Gottfried Curio and somebody else that in the particular Swiss cheese that we consider, there are no intersections of the four cycles, the tau B and the tau S do not intersect. Therefore, there's only one set of contributions which are indicated by KK. And so as Quevedo had mentioned yesterday, based on the conjectures of Berg, Hark et al. Involving, you know, T6 mod Z2 cross Z2 calculations, they were, you know, when we can write out a contribution to the Taylor potential, it turns out it is subdominant in the LVS limit as compared to the perturbative alpha prime and non-perturbative alpha prime corrections. But I just thought I'd mention it.
On the D left, on the string loop correct. What do you have that for?
You mean these
loop
correct?
Yes.
Okay, so this has been thrown in just to, you know, this is the same motivation as was done by Grimm for making the Hansen margin invariant. So, you know, the entire non-trivial marginal transformation contributions coming from this piece and the rest of the piece should better be invariant. So that's why it's a contribution of this type. I'm basically taking the result of the conjecture of Baer, Hark et al.
But it was not like that.
It's not like that. Well, anyways, as far as the tau piece is concerned, that's not going to play a big role. Yeah. I doubt that this is wrong, frankly. So, but anyways, as I said, if the earliest limit, we don't care about this. So all said and done, essentially the potential turns out to be written in terms of four, a contribution of four terms, and it is the first term in the LVS limit, assuming that like the KKLT scenario, okay. You know, one disregards essentially the CS piece of the W as compared to the non-perturbative piece, and one assumes that the D1 instanton number N1, which corresponds to the wrapping of
the Euclideanized D3 brain around the smaller divisor is more than one, one can show that the potential turns out to be written as a norm squared of a Keplerian derivative of the non-perturbative superpotential with respect to the complexified divisor, the smaller one. When you extremize this potential, you end up with a locus, which actually turns out by the analysis of the Hessian and the eigenvalues turns out to be a saddle point. And well, there is also a corresponding minimum. And essentially by arguments, standard arguments, you know, the idea is that if you kind of move away from this extremum, you end up with increasing the value of the potential to a positive value because the contribution coming from the norm square of the covariant derivative of the complex structure superpotential is positive and superdominant as compared to the other contributions. So it strongly suggests the existence of a minimum, a disorder minimum. Now, as far as in the remaining 1.5 minutes or so, I would just say the following that, so we try to figure out, is it possible to solve the eta less than one and the epsilon less than one condition. I remember I'd asked you that one should pay close attention to the genus zero Goldberg-Komarov-Vaffa invariance. So basically the idea is this, that you know if one uses the Castanova's theory of studying moduli spaces of V0, D2 bound states as done by Clement and his group, it was shown that for appropriately high degrees for genus zero holomorphic curves, the value of the Goldberg-Komarov-Vaffa invariance is incredibly large. So in that sense, one can sort of argue that the epsilon less than one and the eta less than one conditions are indeed satisfied. And what happens is that one is able to show by investigating the eigenvalues of the Hessian that one can also identify the suitable inflaton direction, which gives you the information about the process of inflation beginning at a saddle point, following a certain trajectory, and ending basically when the epsilon and the eta less than one conditions are violated, which probably is a de Sitter minimum. Okay, so, and just a last remark in the conclude. Okay, I am concluding. This is my conclusion, minus one. So if I look at the number of e-foldings, by essentially picking up the relevant degrees of the genus zero holomorphic curves, if one, and by assuming that the volume has been extremized in such a way that this is true, one actually ends up with the number of e-foldings to be of the order of 60 as required. Thank you.
The inflaton here is which sort of field?
Basically, it's coming from a linear combination of the two real NSNS axion components.
So, the axions are the partners of which of the moduli? The
D2. You expanded D2, the real D2, in terms of the real components.
The G.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the other thing I was curious. You seem to include something I don't understand. That you have the alpha prime corrections, then you went to non-perturbative corrections. What about the rest of the perturbative? How can you see that the non-perturbative correction will be dominant over any other correction that are in the all the other higher order?
You mean beyond alpha prime Q?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again.